go.
how?
Hey, Rob Stensinger of interactive-storyteller.com. How are you doing? How the heck are you?
I'm doing pretty flipping awesome. Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com. How are you doing?
It's a mixed bag. Life is a mixed bag, but I'm feeling pretty good right now. So that's the important thing.
Is it a box of chocolates?
It is not a box of chocolates.
No.
Well, maybe it is like a box of chocolates, except that sometimes you get the ones that have the icky goo inside of them. But no, I'm feeling good now because I'm always excited to do the Lean Into Art show with you. And we're trying a different structure this time. I want to be playful. And Rob, I know that you are always in ready to be, what's the word you like to use? Impish.
Yeah, impish, sure.
Yeah.
What's the, I can be the monkey to your hurdy-gurdy, sure.
What is that a reference to?
I don't know. Like those little, you know, remember Grape Ape and like, you know, that was a play on that where I'd assume there was some kind of organ grinder, you know, music making person with a hat on the street that you could put money in, but he would just crank a thing and while a monkey danced.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that you crank that makes the music is a hurdy-gurdy.
Oh, I don't like that analogy because I don't like the idea of you being a monkey who dances for me. But you know, I can play the part of the ethnic immigrant who's just trying to make a hustle, you know? Okay. Curveball. We haven't done curveballs in a long time. And for those who are new to the show, Rob and I used to do this thing where we'd throw really difficult questions that really don't have answers at one another and watch the other squirm as they try to answer the question. And I got one for you this week, Rob, and I'm hoping that I can come up with one every week from now on, because I think this is a great way to get our minds kicking.
I do miss the curveballs, and I will do my best to come up with some. And I don't have one yet, but maybe I'll make up one during the show.
Yeah, maybe one will occur to you while you're trying to suss out this one. Okay, so transparency. There's a lot of positive attitude connected to the word transparency. One might even suggest that you can never have too much transparency. I'm going to throw an analogy at you of a situation where I was talked out of transparency. And at the time, I thought it was a really good reason. And I still think about that. And I still kind of go, I don't know, you know, what is the right way and the wrong way to deal with this thing? So I'm going to make up a story that roughly approximates. I'm talking about a friend, right? I'm asking for a friend. I'm at a convention. I'm selling my books. And I want to sell my books. And I ask my table mate. I make up a sign that says, help me get back home. Need gas money. Buy some comics. And it is a situation where, honest to goodness, I really do need the money to get home. You know, this is not me trying to be funny. This is a situation where, you know, my money's so tight. I got robbed earlier that day or whatever. I lost my wallet on the train. But in any case, I need the money to get home. And so I think, well, maybe if I put up a sign and I try to be fun about it, like, hey, help me out. Help a bro out. I want to get home. Buy a few books. You won't be sorry. The books are good. My table mate says to me that that's bad transparency because you should lead with the card that my books are so good that you just want them. This is your opportunity, dear reader, to get a really solid read at a very reasonable price. So don't lead with the whole, I need the money, because that's a given. We know you need money, otherwise you wouldn't be here trying to sell books. But lead with the card that the work is good. Now, that's not a lie. You know, I do believe in the work, otherwise I wouldn't be sitting behind a table. But I guess my question comes out of, is transparency always a good thing, or are there conditions where you want to switch around what you're actually being transparent about? Was that a question? Did I just say things that amounted to a question?
Oh, I think part of the curveball is unearthing the question from that scenario. You've got a lead question, and then you've got a backup singer set of questions, and possibly a whole band of other questions, all in that scenario. What I'm hearing is like, so transparency. And you've got a situation where It's interesting because I think why would you want to be transparent, and what are you trying to get out of that sharing, right? Mm-hmm. And if that is just a general attitude or style, I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's those are the kinds of things I think of. I'm just going to represent my view. I'm not going to try to be extra diplomatic, Rob.
Right. Okay.
So let's see. For me, I would actually wonder about why am I doing this, and both rationally and emotionally, like, why am I trying to engage in this kind of connection that seems outside the context of the professional reason why I'm here, right? So I'm here to do a service, and I've expressed and finished this comic, and I want to engage in trade with you. But when you're going about a business transaction, there's so many places that could lead to someone being distracted and not completing the transaction with you, that could lead them to not feel compelled, even if they start to think about it and they engage with your work. So if your goal is to find another emotional hook to bring them through that transition from learning about your work to evaluating and observing and putting it in their hands. Even if you're aware of, well, I'm adding this extra emotional hook to this, this is going to possibly pull people who have more sympathy and curiosity for my work through to that, complete the transaction. Then I'm aware of that, and it's kind of being manipulative, and I'm cool with that because my need is great. I mean, this is really legitimate. Like, I need to get home. This is, this is a reality thing here. I'm not forcing you to buy it, but I sure am trying to hook you harder and pull you through to make that choice easier. So you separate with your money and you walk away with, my book, which is now yours in your hands. Mm-hmm. So I both look at it at that kind of dynamic, like, what am I trying to get out of that? And,
I like what you said about context. I wrote this word down because you really talked about the context of the moment in the place where you are when you're doing this thing, right? Yeah. The context of the venue, the context of the audience that's there. What are they expecting from me? What am I expecting from them? Robert Clemens is saying in the chat, is it any less manipulative than a Black Friday sale? Well, I don't think, I've never seen a Black Friday sale where anybody, well, no, I guess, implicitly they're saying, put us into the black with this sale, aren't they? Right.
Absolutely. So what they're trying to do there is they're playing on your fear of loss. There's scarcity going on where Black Friday is an event that happens once a year, and they play with your perception of value, right? Where it's a similar thing. It's totally a similar thing because it's adding this extra emotional context and getting to the way you make decisions isn't perfectly rational, right?
We're going to talk about predictably irrational again?
Boy, I mean, I'm trying to dodge it. I need to read more books along the lines of behavioral economics.
The fact that you mention it so often makes me say, I need to read this book. And the fact that I can remember the title because it's come up in our discussions so often is a good sign.
It's pairing, I would also say, is How We Decide. There's two books that I think are really strong, and they're both actually great audiobooks as well. The unabridged editions.
I will put them in the show notes with an affiliate link so people can purchase them, and then we'll get a little bit of a kickback. It'd be a great way to support the show, everybody.
Exactly. Help us get home.
Well, I mean, but that's part of this thing. It's like when you're sharing stuff, you're also, this is something you've criticized me about in the past, and good on you for actually, giving me some pointed criticism sometimes. I can't remember if this is in the last episode or the episode before, but, I made that all that puffy talk that I like to do about, when He-Man finishes what he's doing, he takes off. And you said, yeah, but, He-Man isn't in a situation where the dude's got to eat. He gets to be Prince Adam, go home to the palace and everything. So we shouldn't avoid that. But what I get confused about sometimes, and I really struggle with this, is, and that's, I think it's going to lead into our topic of the day. I think that's why I had this curveball at the ready, because I'm always struggling with how personal do I get? How candid do I get? How transparent am I about what I share, both as a content creator? Like I've taken scenes out of comics that I've written because it was too personal. I was hitting too close to the surface of my skin, and I didn't feel right about it. I didn't feel like I was being a storyteller. I felt like I was complaining publicly, and so I pulled it out. And so it's what I get stuck on is, when are you being, how do you find out for yourself when what's the limits of transparency? And is there such a thing as being too transparent sometimes? Some people probably know. Some people would say, no, you let everything hang out. I feel like we've broached this topic in the past before.
Yeah. And we're going to do it again, too, because I am absolutely hung up on this topic and trying to work through my own situation regarding that. Because I think part of finding your creative voice is, I mean, so let's see. In a few of your modules and workshops that you've taught, I've noticed you'll bring up the idea of writing villains, and it could be through podcasts and whatnot too, that, I mean, but you'll bring up writing villains with I think I'll miss your phrasing, but it was with like just a holistic perspective and full, like, unconditional love even for them kind of thing, where that way you're not facing a cardboard cutout of who that person is supposed to be in your story. They can actually react in ways that are more nuanced if you're willing to see the world from their perspective.
Even my two-dimensional villains are villains that I want to treat with perfect love.
There you go. Perfect love. Thank you.
And I borrowed that language from Joseph Campbell, but yeah, the reason being that I don't want to write a character who is there for the audience to boo and hiss and throw tomatoes at. I want all of my characters, if possible, I don't know how successful I am at this thing, but if I'm going to do my darndest to make all of my characters into something that somebody in the audience can identify with. I want to create a cast where there's at least somebody for somebody out there, right? Even the 2D guys.
So then when you're editing your own words and you're changing your expression, I would argue that it's related to that, where you're not treating yourself with perfect love, where you're completely at peace with yourself and willing to be a whole person and express yourself completely.
Checkmate.
I know, dude. It's painful though. Like I'm working on it. I'm practicing that.
Oh, that was good, Rob. I slapped the mat. Oh my gosh. Mm. Oh, you're getting too damn good at this thing. So
that's funny. I don't know.
But you're right. You're right. I mean, we were just talking about this like in a couple episodes ago, was when I got mad about the whole idea of letting ourselves be human beings, right? And I started talking a million miles an hour. I think I was, as you said on Twitter, I was you at 1 1¾ speed. Is that right? But yeah, it's like we have to, when you're talking about like embracing a character with perfect love and like in enjoying all of their faults as well as what makes them cool, you have to be that way about yourself too, and allow yourself to be that kind of slightly goofy human being and be cool with that. Not just like, well, what are you going to do? And that's going to figure into our topic today. I got that written down actually on a note card here for follow-up, is this idea of the difference between saying, what are you going to do? Versus, I have no control over this. I will press on, despite not having control over this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
making my own note. Okay.
so much then for curveball. I think Rob knocked it into the stands, and a little kid caught it, and he's going to go home and remember this forever. So topic is really deeply related to this. I'm going to pull up my messages app, because we were having some texts as we were trying to suss out what we're going to do this week. And you know, this is something that I want, now I'm going to be a little transparent, and I don't know if this is right or wrong, Rob. This is related to the topic in that I don't know if I'm oversharing here, but you know, sometimes when we're doing the show, we don't know until the night of what the heck we're to talk about. You know, it's like Tuesday afternoon is my time to sit down and look at what's happened to me this week. What was I thinking about this week? What was bumming me out? What was really making me giddy? What was making me tired and just feeling like, oh, I can't, oh, another day, you know? And why? Why was that going on? And then we share a few texts back and forth. I pitch, like, this is what's going on with me. Is there a topic in there? And usually you figure it out. You dig down in there and you dig like a key phrasing that I used in there. And said, there's where the thing is.
Well, we do that for each other. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I would say go forward with, any level of transparency you're comfortable with. I'm cool, man. Let's do it.
Well, okay. So, you know, all right. So I really don't like being that guy who talks about other podcasts, and I know we've done it in the past. I try to avoid it if I can.
Dude, like, how do I know you, Jersey?
I know.
I think sometimes I do wonder if it's bad business sometimes, but I do notice like even podcasts like I currently listen to and whatnot, they do it too. And I'm like, why not? Why not?
If we're involved in this thing, then we probably got there because we enjoy the medium, right? So yeah, guess what? I listen to stuff that I subscribe through an RSS feed through this thing called iTunes, and it gets put on this device that I put the headphones in my ears and I listen to it whenever I want to. It's really neat. So I was listening to a show that you got me hooked on, Rob, which I kind of have a on again, off again relationship with, and it's that Merlin Mann show, the Back to Work thing. And this week he was talking about this interview, not an interview, but more like an essay. And I want to make sure I get the guy's name right, by Jad Abumrad, the guy who does the show Radio Lab, and we'll link to it in the show notes. It's at transom.org/P=28787 if you want to go there right now. I can post it in the chat, but people should be listening.
Gotta love
this.
Those special CMS URLs.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, so it's a unique identifier for an article saying, like, tell me what article it is. Instead of using a human readable identifier for that article, it's using like some kind of, you know, like expression like a cat would drop on your carpeting, you know. Anyway, this is the system version of that. Okay. Mini rant over.
Don't get Rob started on CMSs. That's actually, I think it's awesome that you get hot and bothered about that. I mean, it's like, I'm sure to some people it's the same thing with me and, you know, like sound effect colors. But anyway, so this Jad Abumrad article is, I mean, I'll just read the headline and that says it all. And you can always listen to the Back to Work podcast, which I'll link to in the show notes if you want to hear what Merlin Mann was so shaken up about. But he says, the terrors and occasional virtues of not knowing what you're doing. Okay, not knowing what you're doing. And I thought, well, this is a topic we talk about all the time, is faking our way through it. And I get excited. I love the idea of faking it till you make it and all that. And I love improvising. I love not knowing what's going to happen. And, you know, we did an episode called... I think Ready for Surprises or something like that, or, you know, so it's been a constant theme for me for the last couple of years of really feeling delighted by being able to fake my way through something and find out something about myself through that process. But one of the things that Jad Abumrad, he talks about in there is that this faking it was hard work. It was really hard work, and it was it all boiled down to this really quintessential question. Who am I? Right? Oh, my gosh. Are we really going to do that? Oh, who am I? We're going to get into that kind of silly kind of stuff. But, you know, it made me go, well, you know, what's the log line for what I do? What's the log line for what Lean Into Art is? What's the log line for myself as an illustrator and as a cartoonist and in my career in general? I say cartoonist and teaching artist, that kind of works. But what's my mission statement? What's my ethos? What's my, you know, and it got me thinking about hard about realizing that I'm in like this weird transition period. And I talked about this on a past show too, being in the state of being a learner again and being excited about that. not feeling like I'm the guy who's doling out the wisdom, which, you know, there are past podcasts where I walked dangerously close to that dark, dark place of being the master on the pulpit, or pretending to be, in my case. But when you're in the state of the learner, you know, you don't necessarily have a very clear, crystallized picture of who you are. And, man, I'm just going to wind up buckshotting you, Rob, unless you cut me off here. But the thing is that it, like, this goes back to another thing that I've talked about in the past, is that, you know, there's that idea of, like, when you're a kid and you look at adults and they seem fully formed and perfect and they just know everything they're doing. Everything they do is assured. They're assured of themselves. They own themselves. And so this picture forms in your head, at least for me it did when I was a little kid. Like, you're to wake up one morning and you're to say, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican, and you're done. Right? You just progress. You just go through the motions from here on out, and all the decisions are easy to make because you know the definitions of who you are. And then you get to be an adult, you realize, oh, it's not that simple. And I even resent the idea of having such a simplistic way of thinking about myself. You know, we're dynamic creatures and we should be self-contradicting human beings. But at the same time, to have like a very fuzzy picture of who you are, boy, that put some fear in me, and it made me realize that I've got a lot of work to do. And then it made me realize that I was confronting a quintessential question. What's the line, if there is one? And there probably isn't, Rob. But let's see if we can navigate around it a little bit. Is there a line between servicing an audience and evolving your voice? Did I just make a question? I think I did. If you listen to everything that I just said for the past 3 minutes, I'm really talking about, I feel like I'm at a point when you're in the state of the learner, you haven't quite figured out what your voice is yet. And if you start to get some traction in what you're doing, do you run a risk of confining yourself to, like, the internet wants to make a cardboard cutout out of you, right? Audiences want to turn you into the, you know, like the Justin Bieber that people stalk, you know, like the kids who chase him around, they know everything that they read about him in Teen Beat magazine or whatever, but they don't really know the guy, right? How do we navigate these really, really muddy, choppy waters? And I'm wondering if anybody else has struggled with this, or if I am just being a complete navel gazer right now.
I don't think it's navel gazing. Stepping back. So we've been doing this podcast now darn close to 1 year. And we're going through what I think is sort of a natural cycle of, okay, you cross a threshold. I mean, a trip around the sun is a useful thing to observe. And for us doing something, you know, pretty much weekly for that whole time, you build up this track record, and there's this thing that you can observe and reflect upon. And we've been setting out to do this as a service and work with this community that has similar interests and whatnot, which honestly on its face, it really seems like a crazy idea, where frankly, we're trying to provide a service to people who definitively don't need or want a service, right? Right. I mean, you're all self-starters. You're all self-taught learners in some regard. You are probably already engaged in some kind of blogging and sharing of your knowledge in some way, shape, or form. There's honestly, it's funny where you may see what we're doing and just think, so what? Yet you're exactly who we're actually trying to hang out with and be helpful, where we can hopefully all together go further. Because absolutely, like I'm a student as well. And at the same time, maybe it's because of my chosen profession that a lot of the focus of what I've done is I'm often simultaneously student and expert, simultaneously trying to understand, how do I apply this thing that I know to this new space, you know, doing software and UI design and different hats in those kind of squishy realms, where I'm used to all of a sudden needing to read and remember a heck of a lot of all of a sudden like rules about the farming insurance industry, right? For one of my clients. Yeah, I'm going to use that every day. Not really, but I need to load this stuff in my head enough to be able to act on it. And in the end, I can't sit there at the end after I've prepared myself and then go, well, technically I haven't done this my whole life, so I don't know. What do I have to say that's valid? I've got to somehow incorporate that fresh experience with everything that I got and freaking do something that's useful and be okay with the fact that the rest of what will come of this is a conversation with everyone that's around me. And I need to provide this catalyzing assistance, which is one of my skills that can integrate the wish lists and the ideas for, well, we want to do this new business, or we wish it would, you know, have these cool features, whatever, and somehow integrate that into something, express that design and say, yeah, that's what I recommend. Even though, you know, so in a way, like I knew it was crazy setting off to do this with you, Jersey, you know, because it's not like I was many years long teaching artists and many years podcaster and all that stuff. But I did know that I, you know, we'd worked long enough where I felt like, okay, it makes sense that we're each bringing something to the table here that could deliver value to a community. And let's see. Stepping back to your question.
Well, no, see, it's not so much about the starting that is interesting to me. What I'm speaking to right now is once you're along.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, obviously, this is something, you know, we've talked about on this show, I've talked about on other shows, like back in the art and story days, is that it requires a little bit of arrogance on your part to start. Eventually, you're going to have to make a choice of either you're going to sit around and wait until you feel like you're an expert at it, at which point you won't start, ever, because very few people really feel like they're an expert at it all the time.
I disagree that it's arrogance, though. I vehemently disagree that that's arrogance. And that could just be because I'm arrogant and everyone thinks that or whatever. I don't know. I would hope not, but I can't control that.
Maybe I chose the wrong word. Should I have chosen?
No, it's just that there's a confidence, though. Mm-hmm. There's a belief that you're willing to hold on to and proceed with. That's it. It takes that seed of belief, which I don't feel is arrogance.
No, perhaps I chose the wrong word. A sense of, I guess confidence is the best word that would work for that right now. A sense of confidence. I mean, because like when I was starting everything I've ever started, I never felt fully ready for it. Robert gave you a point. If we're going to gamify the show, the scoreboard reads Rob 2, Jersey 0. Man, I got to pick up my game. But not that this is competition. Although competition's fun. Where was I going with this? But a sense of exuberance, right? A almost an irrational exuberance sometimes that, you know, we can put on the show right here, you know, that kind of thing. Exactly. And like, oh, we're not anticipating all the problems are going to come out of this. We're just going to get started and do it, and we'll face those problems as they come. I wouldn't call that confidence as such. And we're going to split hairs here into semantics, because confidence to me suggests a sense of appreciation of what is going to happen. I'm confident that I can handle these problems because I've thought it through. Whereas most projects I've ever started, man, I do as much as I can to think it through, but there's so many things that I know are going to blow up in my face. And when I get there, it's going to be tough, but we'll give it our best shot. You know, I don't know if that like hope.
Well, and I'm threading the line between those perspectives where it's part emotional. It's part rational. It's rational because you've demonstrated this behavior before and you've seen the outcomes that come from navigating the chaos that can ensue between the start and the finish, or the inception and the delivery or whatever. And then, so you know that through that experience, you've learned some things, you've gained some heuristics and ways to try to navigate these situations better. And then you've got the emotional thing that could be totally irrational. The belief that, well, I think I can do it. I feel good about doing this. I don't know how else to be or whatever else is driving that. Anyway.
Well, I would just say that you're wired in a pretty good way. Not without your faults, but that's a good problem to have that you have there. And I think that I'm similarly wired in a lot of ways. But what I was driving at is let me use an analogy based on language that I use in my classrooms is when I'm trying to talk a kid. Oh, daring. Robert Clemens is saying in the chat, daring, a sense of daring, possibly. Okay. So the language I was going to use for my classrooms was such is that, you know, when I'm trying to talk a kid out of doing a, like, you know, the 13-year-old who comes to me and says, I've got a 12-volume epic graphic novel manga series that I want to do, and it's going to have 60,000 characters, and these five people are going to die in chapters 8 and 9, and I've got it all planned out, and then they're 13, right? And, like, you know that when you start something when you're 13, by the time you get to 15, your work's going to change a lot, your tastes are going to change a lot. A lot is going to happen in that time, so... One of the things I say to these kids is, you know, I try to talk them into doing mini comics. And one of the things I say is that, you know, when you're doing a 200-page graphic novel, it's a lot like when you do an 8-page mini comic. When you do an 8-page mini comic, you start out going, this is going to be great. This is going to be such an awesome story. You get halfway through and you say, oh, God, this is terrible. What business do I have holding a pencil? I never want to do this again. And then you push through and you finish it and you go, whew, that wasn't so bad. Hey, it was actually pretty good. Not perfect, but it was pretty good. I want to do that again. You go through that cycle with every mini comic you do. I said, but graphic novels like that, except you get to go through that 150,000 times before you get to the end. And so there's a lot of opportunities to feel terrible while you're doing something so grandiose, you know? And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to play emotional language with them to not talk about, well, 2 years from now, your work's going to change, because they can't appreciate that yet, right? The future's this big open thing to a 13-year-old. But where I'm going is this idea of you're midstream, right? You started something, you're moving along, and the first couple pieces click together, and now you're hitting those high and low points where, oh, I have no business doing this, and then, oh, the next day I feel pretty good about it again. And once you get into a rhythm doing it, then the expectations start coming down, or the expectations descend upon you of this is what you are expected to do. This is what we think of you. We're the audience and we've come to expect this thing from you. And then when you turn around and say, hey, I want to try something different, there's that fear of, boy, I don't want to wreck what was working. I don't want to deal with complaints. And what if, here's the thing I struggle with personally. It's not so much about disappointing an audience as much as it is, what if I'm bailing on something that's about to work and I just have a short attention span? And what if I'm turning to this thing over here going like, hey, that would be a cool thing to try. And then I start neglecting the thing that was actually working for me before I gave it a full college try, right? And I'm betting I'm not alone on this. Like people, you know, they struggle with this. Like I'm at a point of change. I'm at a point of transition. I'm growing into something else. I don't know what it is yet. Man, oh man, how do I navigate this? How do I get through and figure out where I want to go with this thing? Now, in that Jad Abumrad article, he talks about like there's like arrows that pop up that are like sort of feel like they're set by you of the future to say, follow me. And it's sort of like, it's like work really hard, get through all these stressful periods with the faith that eventually something's going to pop out at you. But, boy, you know, it's as nice as that is to hear. That's like the teenager who just got dumped by his girlfriend and dad says, you'll get over this, son. That doesn't help the teenager after he just got dumped. Right. So,
yeah, I mean, learning by experience, it's what other way is there to teach experience via, you know, other than experience? And it sounds like I just did a self-referential definition, but that's the nature of that
of or pertaining to experience.
Exactly. How do you? So planning that. Let's say looking at that mindset as far as reflecting back on the audience question, and I think you were like, okay, trying to balance serving an audience and developing your voice? And is that sort of at odds with one another? Are you know, like developing your voice and serving an audience inherently has a tension kind of thing? Is that...
Run that by me again.
So, okay. Trying to weave back to what I think was a very important framing of the sort of the framing statement of all of this that I think we could tie back to is puzzling out when you're going through this kind of exploring and questioning, and you're exploring, well, you're providing your creative stuff to an audience and you're starting to learn more about them and you're learning more about you as you're doing that. And is there inherently, like, where you're going, where you want to go next, a tension then? Because now who are you, what are you going to serve? Are you going to serve the audience or are you going to serve yourself? And I think that's a really worthwhile question. Not that I have an answer to it. But I think that,
okay, let me ask you this as a way to start maybe finding some directions to explore it. Because yeah, this, again, I think this is one of those wonderful topics that don't have a clear cut answer. And those are my favorite kinds of questions and topics.
Yeah.
Like, should you steal? No. Is there a situation where you might have to steal and you might be able to intellectually justify it? Yes. The end, right? Not quite as interesting. Maybe interesting for an ethics class, but now where was I going to go? I threw myself off track with my own tangent. So I want to ask Rob, what do you do when you're dealing, how do you deal with this existential crisis? What strategies or what methods have you found in the past have kind of worked out for you? So like the question that I threw at you in the text that, was really wondering aloud about was, we were trying to figure out what topic to do for the show, as a matter of fact. Now we're gonna get all meta. And I said, boy, I don't know if I want to talk about this, what we're talking about tonight. I said, or do we want to talk about something we had on the list for possible follow-up? Would grinding through and taking on a topic we had previously slated and just do our best with that, would that be the way to navigate these waters and just do what I've done well before and just and look for the surprises in the process of doing what I've done well before? Will that lead me to it? Or would laying it all out and let this sloppy thinking be the thinking exercise on the show, would that be the thing that would instruct me? So everybody who's listening, this is completely self-serving on my part to use this as the topic. But what I'm hoping is that by laying it all out, A, we'll demonstrate the way we think about things, which is, you know, sort of ostensibly what the show's about. Not even ostensibly, it's really implicitly what the show's about. But also, hopefully find a new way to approach the show and maybe find out a couple different surprises about the show as we go through this period of transition, or I go through this period of transition. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. So
grinding or indulging yourself in the creative shiny thing, like the creative distraction, right? Have either of those proved to be fruitful strategies to get through periods of transition? Do they both have their own, or is there one that stood out as a better method for you to help navigate these waters?
Well, I mean, as far as what's right, it's like, so with your audience, I mean, what kind of relationship do you have with them? What is that contract? What is the expectations, right? So the reward for your work so far is to, you know, actually make connections with people, which is what you sought out. So yay. But now with those connections come expectations, and some of them may be in line with where you wanted to go and on the same page, and others may not. It's not up to you. As far as you can build a system, and your motivation for building the system can be totally different from that which of those that consume it, right? Sure. And that's how hacking happens and all that, right? And so or audience members that either, you know, give you too many accolades or throw too much fruit at you, right? I mean, anyway, so let's see. to me, it's I don't know, it's kind of a commitment thing. Like, and obviously I'm trying to navigate, like, what would cause a right answer? That's what I'm thinking through. Because honestly, in either direction, you're gaining experience. You're going to learn. So move forward. That's my, like, my personal bias is moving forward isn't optional. And it's important to allow yourself to experience that. There's a reason why you're having this choice and this puzzle. Why not embrace that too? To say, well, why is this even occurring? Why am I stuck between this interest and that interest? Mm-hmm. What are options that I could do to integrate them, or to, you know what? Because everything. So the problem with, like, car accidents is that two cars are in the same place at the same time, right? And all you have to do is separate those cars either by place or by time. And so these projects, you could do the same kind of thing, right? You could just give them some space,
right?
And, you know, don't have to panic about it and pick, yeah, and just move forward either way.
I totally realize that I'm sounding panicked as I talk about this, and I'm really not. It's more like the excitement of getting to talk about this with somebody after dwelling on it.
No, I'm excited, dude. And, yeah. And I'm not trying to characterize you in a panicked voice at all. That's not,
I've actually gotten
my intent.
I've actually gotten emails from, this is years ago, but I used to get emails from people saying that I sounded panicked whenever I was talking on the show, and I probably was, but they were misunderstanding my, what do you call it? My up-tempo rhythm frightened and scatterbrained rhythm. Interesting comments in the chat here. Robert Clemens again is throwing in, if the audience of a creative person likes what they do at first, why wouldn't they like what the same creative person does next? I would respond, you'd be surprised.
I'll have to say it's Metallica, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry for, you know, if you're not into that. I mean, they definitely were a popular band that had a certain creative direction, then they changed it. And there's nothing wrong with that, actually. Like, and even when I was a frustrated audience member, artists produce stuff, and their producing stuff causes experiences that are now, they're going to channel into their work differently, probably, depending on their relationship with their work, right? If they don't have a restrictive formula that's driven by, you know, some kind of, let's see, what was that podcast we did a while back? It was called The Five Tips.
Yeah.
For,
it was just called Five Tips, I think.
Okay.
I'll look it
but
up.
But it was actually Five Tips for Efficient Storytelling via the model of, using classic 80s cartoons as a set as a model for constraints for storytelling, and just to look at the strengths of that approach.
Five tips to improve your writing by watching cartoons. I'll post that into the
there you go. I knew it had a cooler title than just Five Tips.
That was episode 32 of Lean Into Art, which will be in the show notes.
And let's see that.
I'm sorry. Did I throw you
no,
off?
No. There's so many different ways to take this, and yeah. I'm just standing at a puzzling crossroad.
I want to put some underlines under some things that you said there. It's like a good question that you said. What would cause a right answer? Right.
Mm. Absolutely.
Asking yourself that question, what would cause a right answer? And that helps you cut through the distractions of trying to figure out what the hell you're doing when you're doing it, right? This is that stepping back 1,000-foot view stuff that some people get itchy about, but I find is utterly fascinating. And I think that it's a lot of the process of diving in close and then pulling back up and looking at what you did, coming up for air, looking around at what you're doing, and then going back down again. But then also, I think this is a good credo, and I think this needs to get put onto the Stenzinger coat of arms, is moving forward isn't optional.
Totally have to flag that for follow-up, too, because I realize that's not really a coat of arms. Like, that is a formula for creating. That is a coat of arms algorithm, and my coat of arms is what comes out of that. So, anyway.
You get the semantics award this week, Rob.
I'm sorry, Jersey. I think it's a useful useful distinction.
No. We neither of us are apologizing.
Pedantic, man.
neither of us are apologizing for anything. Remember that? No, this is super, super important. This is another thing that I struggle with is, and I know we've talked about this before, this idea of how I, in the past, have qualified everything that I've said because I want my meaning to be clear. Well, then rather than spending 5 minutes qualifying, how about I just learn to speak more clearly? And then guess what? Your meaning will be unambiguous and you won't have to defend yourself against, but that's not exactly true crowd, right?
As long as you have a good dose of, and I'm totally cool with what I just said and I'm not worried about it. And yeah. So when that kind of questioning still comes up, that's, you know.
Yeah. That's for a whole nother time.
It has no foothold.
So when I say that you win the semantics award this week, I actually mean that in the most positive and loving way possible.
So you mean it in the HTML5 way?
Yeah. Sure.
I don't know. I'm just putting semantics in a good context. It's good to have good to be structured and semantic.
I don't know if there's any other meat on that bone, Rob. It's just that it's I'm experiencing what I would call the more anxious side of being the learner, and it's a good thing. I mean, I'm not in any kind of like throes of Lady of Shalott kind of oh woe is me kind of nonsense. It's more like looking and to quote the Neverending Story again, it's you're standing in front of the magic mirror gate and you're wondering what you're going to find in there. Is sometimes kind men find that they're cruel. Brave men discover they're really cowards. Confronted with their truth selves, most men run away screaming. What am I going to find in there? And how is this going to affect my work? And is the answer to grind through and keep pressing on the way I've been doing things until the wheels fall off of it, and then the answer will reveal itself? Or is it time to be playful and experimental? We spent a lot of time getting to that wording, or I did at any rate.
I don't know. Were you looking for an answer? I don't have this isn't an answer as if now I've stamped this document and it's signed and complete.
Right, right.
But I honestly, either path, as long as you're mindful of your experience, then it'll lead you to a better outcome or outcome that's more well matched to where you want to go because you're paying attention in either way. Wouldn't that sort of?
Yeah, that's pretty much the answer I expected.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you throw the curveball, and sometimes you, I can be an obvious animal.
No. And I think that's the only answer that makes any sense. But sometimes, and here's the other takeaway, and now we can move into takeaways in a second here. Takeaways not for this episode, but like sort of a new thing that I wanted to try out. Speaking of being experimental, is that sometimes the whole purpose of intellectual exercise is to share an intellectual exercise with a peer, to crystallize your thoughts. And normally this would be the kind of discussion I would have with friends privately. And in going back to my initial question at the top of this one with the curveball is, I thought, well, let's, and thank you, Rob, for indulging me in this experiment, is I thought, let's put this out and see how transparent I can be and hopefully still be interesting. Let's see how close I can get to that line of whiny navel gazing and still have useful content for people. As you can see, and this is what I warned you about in the text, I said, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with the answers that we're going to come up with or with the things we'll explore, to which you said, well, that proves it's topic worthy, right? Making ourselves uncomfortable is part of this process, right?
And it's because I'm on the hunt for the honest expression. I'm trying to be a part of that kind of thing. And so I'm looking for these weaknesses in my approach, and we happen to share a similar weakness in this regard. And so, sure, we can kind of be workout buddies when it comes to that topic.
That's actually kind of cool. That, in a meta sense, I think that's kind of a neat thing that is, I'm dog-earing that for post-show follow-up to say, maybe that's one of the things we got to discover out of doing this thing. So, okay, that's what I'm trying to do here, everybody, is I'm trying to model this kind of way of thinking of when you're stuck on something, you talk it out with an art buddy and then and try twisting what you're doing just a little bit and going, I wonder if this is going to make it worse or better. And then you reflect on it and you go, well, there's this one takeaway. This one takeaway is that Rob's on the hunt for the honest expression. By making myself uncomfortable, I express something honestly. And by modeling that, perhaps this is more of, to use a gym analogy, this is working out with your friends. And, you know, maybe that's the unique thing that we could bring to future Lean Into Art shows. If anybody likes that idea, let us know.
But yeah, because ultimately we're doing this to assist in some way. We're trying to provide some value to our community, right? We're not just doing this only to work out. It happens to be wrapped up in this idea of this thing called Lean Into Art.
Right.
On top of that.
And see, and so, I mean, just to speak in a meta sense again, one of the things that I, you know, wrangle with is if you're trying to do a podcast that is sort of the public face of an art center where you're selling workshops, leanintoart.com/workshops, everybody, then how is the best way to present yourself? Do you A, say, hi, everybody, here are my 5 tips to do X, Y, and Z. This is a place where you get expertise. And if you're having trouble struggling with something that you don't know how to do, we've got the answers for you. Go to leanintoart.com/workshops. Or, and this is a discussion that, Rob, you know very well, we've had many times, or do we present ourselves as, we're people who think about things really hard, and we don't always know if we've got the answer, but we've got strategies that help us get through these things, and we can help, by modeling this for you, we can help you think through these things as well. And yeah, we do know how to do a couple things, and we can share that as well. Mm-hmm. Which is the more honest expression, which is the one that feels more natural to us, right? That's the part, because to some people doing the, I've got the 5 tips, that is a perfectly natural state for them to be in. It's not something where I've ever felt like that suit fits me right. Something where I've always felt like, oh, it's tweed and I'm not wearing the right kind of shirt underneath and it's itching me, you know? So.
That's a good one.
You didn't laugh though, so it wasn't that good.
I don't know, whatever. It was delightful in a very, you know, pleasant, effervescent kind of way. It wasn't like a fart joke, you know. So are we leaning on the takeaway section?
Yeah, you want to transition? I don't have a stinger to play, but yeah, we're closing in on an hour, so you want to head over to talk about like... So I just thought it'd be neat to try out this thing for those who don't know what we're talking about. Well, go ahead, Rob.
Hold up, though. Before we head off to there, I just wanted to say that thanks to everyone who's joined us for this in the chat. It's just awesome to see this as we're recording, because, I mean, we haven't replied to every single thing that we see, but this has added food for thought for me as we've been recording. And I keep going back and forth between the two different chats, the one on the Google Plus feed and the one on the YouTube page, which,
are there comments,
I'd love
on
those
the YouTube
to be
page?
In one spot. Yeah, there's been a lot of comments on the YouTube page
what?
As well.
What? I have, oh my goodness. I have not seen them. Oh, there they are. There's Ryan Estrada in there. Son of a gun.
There's Chaos Angel, you know, hey, you know, 30 classes in 30 days, represent.
Ryan Estrada was here and I was not here and I wasn't looking there to pay attention to this. Honesty is always the best answer. The audience trusts those who trust them. And
well, ooh, there is, I want to swing back to it. Actually, I'm, can I pull the brakes and swing back at our topic just
please.
Because of that?
Please.
It's actually related to the transparency curveball and our topic, where honesty at, so if I shut off all filtering on everything I'm about to think and everything I'm about to say, not only would you have to cover your ears lest they melt off your face, but, probably not, but there would be a lot less flow to what I'm sharing, right? It would be more like, and the, not to how do you say this without, because I'm not trying to create comedy out of the different, you know, human diseases and whatnot, but you can have disorders of the brain that cause you to not filter and to not have social cues and whatnot. So by participating, there's somewhere, and I, gosh darn it, I should just have a Semantic Man shirt and just go underneath this and just transform with a cape, because
I'm making a note that the next t-shirt I need to make is a semantics t-shirt. I got to figure out some kind of wording that's very precise about it, though.
And I just, or distinctions, because I love to see clarity via boundaries between ideas, right? So you've got the idea of honesty, and you've got the idea of providing clear, like, passionate expression, and you've got the idea of, well, I'm providing a service, and how do I make all of this clear? How do I package my expression in a deliverable way that allows people to go through the choices to support me, so we have a sustainable system, so I can keep doing this? And what part of that do I need to emphasize to be honest? And how do I, and so, yeah, because if I add all of it to every conversation, that without context, then I don't know what to focus on necessarily, right? And so anyway, there's a lot of nuance there. That's all. And I guess if that's my, that's, I'm sorry to drop an ambiguous takeaway on your doorstep and run, but at least it doesn't smell.
Oh my God, you're on fire
context
today.
Context matters a lot. And it's in a really good way, because this actually ties back into, we don't have to jump here yet, but for me, this ties into the takeaways.
Oh, cool. Well, I want to get this on the air too, is that Ryan Estrada of RyanEstrada.com says, listening to you overthink things while I work keeps me from overthinking what I'm working on. That's awesome. I'm glad that I could provide this service to you.
Sweet. Outsourced overthinking. Awesome.
Oh, that's awesome. No, but you know what? He's right. I can totally see that. Like, listening to somebody else sweat this out, it lets you yell at the TV going, it's like watching Jeopardy, right? You get to go like, no, it's this answer, you dummy. While the guy is like, yeah, no, this is the, I'm really grateful for that comment. That's awesome. Okay, this week's takeaways. So this is something that I want to try out on the show and see how it holds, if we stay excited about it, and see if anybody else responds to it. I thought, you know, we said at the top, like, the part of the thing. Well, and this goes back to last week's episode where I started with talking about some weekly takeaways. Is that I said, like, I think a lot of artists should be playing around with this audio video kind of stuff, like to play around with journaling and reflecting on their work and considering it as an alternative to a blog of some sort. And so then I thought, well, I wonder if we should do an episode on, like, what I think about, or what we think about, like, the discussions we have, sort of like a unboxing of the show's process to show somebody. Because, like, one of the things when I've talked to some other artists, they're like, well, I want to start a show, but I don't know how to do it. How do you pick topics? How do you find guests? How do you even think about structuring a thing, right? And they're like, oh, well, you know, when you do Comics or Great Jersey, it sounds so natural, the questions that you ask. It doesn't look like you're reading off of a card. And it's because I'm not. It's because I'm listening simultaneously to two tracks at the same time, which is a skill you can acquire, right? As, you know, you can probably report on, Rob, after doing this stuff for a little while. Where was I going with this? Oh, so the takeaway thing is that I thought, just like we were saying,
I was purposely not responding. See, I'm more like Bernie of Weekend at Bernie's. You prop me up. So
that whatever, more like silent Bob. So I thought, look, as in lieu of that, let's, part of the modeling exercise of what Lean Into Art is about is modeling the way that we think about things, and how, and one of the ways that I think about things is by being attentive to the things that are happening to me week to week, which generates topics for the show. But then also there's little mini things that don't really deserve a whole hour's discourse, but it's something that happened that I thought was, it's going to be something I make a mental note of, and, you know, I can put it on the table and see if it's useful to anybody else. And so for me, I'm in the midst of, I'll start, Rob, and then you can, unless you want to go first. You want to go first?
Well, no, I was taking note. I'm happy to go first, but this is an interesting topic, the whole performing aspect of podcasting, right? Because everyone's done the mics and all that stuff. And
oh, yeah. You can go to podcastanswerman.com and he's got a whole fleet of like all the stuff you need to buy, right?
Yeah.
And like how to set up, how to configure your RSS feed, how to set up Feedburner, what kind of hosting you should get, and all that technical stuff that you can figure out with just a few key Google searches, sure. Right?
I do. Like we could, if, depending on how far you want it, like as to part two of that, like we could flat out do, here's our model for Lean Into Art. Like here, this is exactly what we do. And because even knowing that, it's not like people would magically know how to download classes and stuff, whatever. You wouldn't. Right. But if we want to spread this too, like what if other specialized learning centers for the arts popped up online because we started advocating and teaching that too?
I think we're both fans of opening up process for other people to avail themselves of it, and not being super uptight about protecting ideas or DRMing them or any of that kind of silliness. Totally.
I took advantage of that I've been wanting to mention that for ages, and it's just perfect opportunity. So by all means, take it away, Jersey.
Okay. Well, my big takeaway is not that big of a takeaway. It's more of a reminder to myself. I'm embroiled in 2 6-week courses at the Ann Arbor District Library. On Tuesdays, I do the Comic Book Academy. And then Wednesdays, I do the Comics Fundamentals class. Comic Book Academy is for kids. Comics Fundamentals is for adults. And this past week, I had 2 situations where these 2 different age groups gave me very different input that I had to respond to that was not on my agenda of what I was planning to do. Now, I've made no secret out of the fact that these days I walk into a classroom and the five minutes before I get into the classroom is often where I figure out what I'm going to actually teach that day. And that's part of the fun of it. I intentionally do this to myself to create that sense of panic of you got to come up with something now. You don't have a choice. You don't get to futz around about it. You don't get to go, oh, is this a good lesson? Is that a good lesson? No, you figure it out now while you're walking into the room. So when I walk into the room, I often have a plan of some sort. It's not like a clearly, you know, delineated plan, but it's an agenda of sorts. But in both these situations, both age groups acted their age, and I had to respond to that and keep the class interesting for them so as not to punish them for being what they are. So it's in the middle of summer. It's late July. And I am grateful that 30 kids decided that they wanted to come outside or come in from outside and sit in a room and draw comics with me for 2 hours, right? But it's late summer. They're kids. They want to go outside. They want to jump around. They want to be, extroverted. They don't want to just sit there with a pad and just draw like this. And so I had a mutiny just this afternoon in my class where the kids, they got out of their seats and they were running around and they were yelling at each other, jumping around, and they were not responding to me. Now, I saw some of the library staff kind of getting a little tense, like, what's going on over there? Is this going to be a Lord of the Flies moment? Is this going to be Children of the Corn?
This is the last ride of Jersey Drozd as the kids just take you down.
And so I was... I caught myself doing the whole, like, hey, if you could just take your seats just for a second, I got one more thing. And then I literally did the whole, like, I had the thing in my hand. I was like, you know what? And I threw it over my shoulder, and it was like a Kool-Aid commercial. I was like, would you guys rather do this instead? and I brought out the dry erase board. I'm like, would you like to just do some big group drawings, and let's just, like, take this energy and do something with it? And so I did what I call... you know, is a nickname, my cool down exercise, which is where I draw random shapes on a board, and I invite one student to come up and turn that shape into a thing. It's a teachable moment. It teaches creativity, teaches character design in a very loose, fun way. Lets kids get to be exhibitionists by showing off in front of all the other kids. They get to be in front of kids. And, you know, this is something I've talked about before, I'm sure, is that kids don't often want to put things on paper because nobody's looking at it, but they love putting stuff on a board because everybody's looking at it, right? Especially an extroverted kid. So even though you and I go, well, but you don't get to keep it because it's getting erased, doesn't matter. The room's looking at it. That's the important thing. So a modification I did on this, so it's not just to be a bunch of random things that kids are like, oh, I put 2 dots on it, now it's a face, is I draw the contours of instantly recognizable characters. So I'll draw the contour of Darth Vader. Right. So you recognize the helmet, you recognize the lightsaber, and then I put not Darth Vader. Right. And the kids have to figure out how to turn that into something else. This is not R2-D2. This is not a battle droid. This is not Pikachu. And the kid's got to turn it into something else based on that limitation. Again, you know, limitations breeding creativity. But then because the energy was so high, I felt like this is going to turn into Animal House with 30 kids in the room all wanting their turn. So I'm going to up the ante and I'm going to put a 10-second time limit on this. You got 10 seconds to turn that thing into another thing. And so now it becomes this high. Now the kids get to do a countdown with me. The kids were singing the Jeopardy theme while the one kid was up there. And it turned into this really high energy celebratory environment. The kids had a blast. And yet I still kept them sort of, I still kept them, right? I still had mm-hmm. them with me. And it wasn't out of my control. I wasn't screaming at anybody. So the takeaway is, here's where takeaway maybe turns into stupid helpy tip, is sometimes you just got to back off and just let it go with the flow, as it were, and not fight what's happening in the room or with a creative project, but go, okay, what can I do with what's left of this? I've got 30 kids who are all jumping around and screaming. I've got 40 minutes left of the class. How can I turn this into something where they're still going to get something out of it, but I'm not yelling at them and being the teacher with the ruler saying, sit down and do your work, right?
That, wow. Honestly, that's a pretty darn awesome exercise. That, I mean, it sounds super, like, honestly, I think I would be pretty scared in that situation. You know, I mean, not doing that like every day or whatnot. I mean, but even that, I mean, there's a lot of them and just one of you. That's an interesting, how did you create that decision space? I mean, or was it fully instinct, or how did what caused the change, or you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. No, I do know what you mean, because like there should be some kind of inner barometer of some sort that alerts.
Cause it was almost like, cause you respond, like the situation's happening. You obviously are I'm trying to characterize phases of the progression mm-hmm, of it. Mm-hmm. And like, so you're looking to say, well, how could I redirect this?
Yeah.
And then mystery box, and then all of a sudden idea, and you start succeeding and redirecting. Like, what's the mystery box portion of that?
The mystery box portion is when I heard myself say, if we could just take our seats. The moment that was the moment when I knew I was in mystery land, was when I heard myself pleading with the children to do something they clearly did not want to do. And when I said those words aloud, that's sort of like that's flagged in my mind as, don't be the guy to say, let's do the work. Don't be the guy to say, don't do what you're doing. Always, this is a rule of improv, and Ryan Estrada might be able to back me up on this, is that you don't say no, you say yes and, right? And so when those kids were doing something that was clearly making other people in the library uncomfortable with the energy level and people looking in like, does that guy even have control over that room? Control, whatever. But it set off the alert to me that I've got to do something about this now. And then I heard myself say the words, let's take our seats, realizing, no, you just said no. You have to say yes and. Okay, yes and. So then I looked around the room and I saw they're jumping around. They have a lot of energy. How can I get them to draw while still getting to avail themselves of this energy, right? And it was a situation where I just noticed that the kids all wanted the other kids' attention. So how can I do something quick that gets that capitalizes on that desire to be looked at and applauded?
That is cool. Like, that's a neat process. And there's no way like my takeaway is going to have this cool process coming out of it, I'm guessing. But it was like, so responding to that negative flag. Right. And I do a lot of stuff based on that. Like, most of the coolest, biggest projects and systems and stuff I've done has been because I got frustrated at something. And I noticed, like, I want to make this different. And then the action is not as often like as positive as I can possibly be. But that start, that internal thing was like something hit with me that I'm like, this doesn't feel right. And I want to do something. And so you go from like the flag to like taking inventory. You described observing what is the situation, taking inventory of the situation, and then trying to find an outcome that matched your inventory, right? It's like, right, what's in my cupboard for supper kind of thing.
Yeah. 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 That really was it. And I mean, it's part of the culture of my classrooms, for better or worse, that I never want to ask the kids to do anything that they don't want to do unless it's a trick where I've got a twist payoff that will delight them immediately afterwards, right? Yeah. So if there's something where they're like, oh, I'm like, yeah, but stick with me because in 5 minutes, this thing's going to get awesome. And then it does, right? But never where, but even in that situation, if there's a kid who's like, clearly they just do not want to do that thing, I am not the guy who asks them to do that. I'll try to find an alternative that teaches a equally beneficial thing that speaks just to what they're comfortable doing at that point. If that makes me a squishy teacher, so be it. I'm not in the, I'm fortunately not in the situation where I have to teach standards-based content. I'm an art teacher teaching stuff at libraries. So I have that flexibility, but having that sort of, I guess, for lack of a better term, that kind of like poorly worded coat of arms for myself.
It's a principle.
Yeah, a principle. I have that principle in mind, so it makes it easier to decide what elements in the cupboard actually get used in that emergency, right? And my favorite thing in the world is when I make administrators in the buildings where I teach like a little bit like this, you know, like grabbing their collar when they're doing like this whole like, I don't know about this. And when the kids all go home delighted and they're going to their parents like, oh, we did the coolest thing today. That makes me feel really great. I feel like I'm blazing fun territories when that happens. Maybe it's watching too many 80s movies with Rodney Dangerfield in it that make me feel that way.
Exactly. It's okay. That's a fun model though. Takeaway that I've, let's see, this is definitely more than this week, but I started acting on this week. So it's like this is a takeaway from like a previous based on actions I took from a prior takeaway. It's just this infinite nested, like terrible maze in my brain. Okay. So I've been puzzling out how do I help and propose improvements as far as lean into art and as far as Guitar Fretter, the different projects I work on.
By the way, happy birthday, Guitar Fretter.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, actually Guitar Fretter turned 2. I noticed a little bit of retweeting happened for its first birthday post. I'm not sure how that happened. It's actually 2. 2010, I forget, January, or not January, July, a different J month, 21st, I think, is when it went live. And what's funny is I'm so dependent on my calendar. I notice when the alert pops up anyway, and it's been a few days. And I heard a voice out of nowhere say the 22nd. So. I think that's the official day. Anyway, so I'm trying to figure out, like, what do I do next? Especially for me, talk about a cognitive dissonance thing. So I've got some projects that have seen a level of success that I feel like there's more there. There's more that, like, we can do at Lean Into Art. There's more that I can do with Guitar Fretter. And, like, especially those two things are really stuck in my mind. And I work through this kind of stuff on a day-to-day basis, recommending process improvements and things related to user experience, which is a really squishy, pretty fun thing for me to consult in because I get to wear a ton of hats and do UI design and information architecture, a ton of different things and business analysis and strategy. And I'd love to live this out. So this other aspect of my life, I have my, you know, my work doing comics, trying to sell those and tabling and doing workshops and lean into art and, you know, the Guitar Fretter. So I try to piece these kinds of things that I would recommend for others for myself. And I don't always fully integrate it. For instance, I realize that a lot of what we're doing with Lean Into Art is we're not just yelling into the void. We want to be in this is weird and I don't know if I can pull it off, but we don't want to be gurus, but we want to be hooligan instigators, right? If you want to like that kind of, I don't know what to say. Like if this is a movement and a crowd that we're a part of, we want to be adding a constructive voice to that crowd, but not in an authoritarian kind of way. And I can make an argument for the other side too, because I do think it's not black and white. It depends on your, where you are along your learning path, I think. But we really don't want to be this, this rubber stamping voice, what have you. Let's see. So I was trying to puzzle out. I realized, like, so there's a gap there. Like, all of a sudden, like, I feel this discomfort, right? Like, this urge to change. How do I improve this business aspect? And I think it has to do with continuing to move forward and having a dialogue with the audience. And so I just went back one day this week and I replied to every single comment everywhere for Lean Into Art. And all of a sudden, it was like everyone was like, oh, I guess you guys do listen. And I wouldn't blame people for being annoyed with the lack of responding or whatnot. Because on one hand, we are trying to deliver the service. But on the other hand, you know, there's that weakness, that inconsistency there of like not fully engaging. Because of, well, hey, look at a similar weakness that both Jersey and I have related to how we want, what kind of transparency, what's our role with you? We don't want to be your commanding gurus, right? So if you're asking us questions that are of a nature that, if you just take a breath, you might have the answer yourself. I would bet, would you have a tough time answering that kind of question, Jersey? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
I know I do.
Here'd be a way to put it, is that questions that on first blush would appear to be ones that a guru would answer readily. But upon closer examination, either the answer is self-evidently ambiguous or complex, or the answer is you just got to push through that, pal. But
sure.
I totally get what you're saying, is that that's somebody reaching out. That's somebody saying, you affected my, man, we just talked about this in a recent episode. You affected my life in some positive way. I'm reaching out to you in whatever way I can to express something to you, right? And to create a connection between the two of us, right? And that is something that should be honored. And I know in the past I've joked around about how I suck at email. You don't get to say that if you're trying to do something that it has a business aspect to it, right? You just don't get to say that.
Well, exactly. Because part of us, so this ties into our overall topic too, where part of us figuring out the shape this service needs to continually take is that dialogue. And it's incredibly meaningful. Mm-hmm. And here's a curveball. That's not really a curveball, whatever, but here's a surprising thing. I know, let's see, none of the comments were of that nature. Like, we're reaching out to people who have a similar interest. And so we have a lot of cool conversations that I think can continue. And I'm not just trying to be, you know, playing to you and, you know, like saying rah, rah kind of stuff to those of you listening, which thank you for listening, by the way. I'm just saying, like, my takeaway was I realized that I need to try more of these uncomfortable things to get better at what I'm trying to get better at. And by trying that one, the response was just obvious, whereas far as people just conversing with us. And I would say it's quite possibly also related to us start doing a consistent weekly thing. And we're just becoming more available because we're also figuring out how we should be available, right? Because part of this we're doing as a service and it's about, you know, paying us. And another part of it is us providing something that's worthwhile and useful in a helpful community sense that right now we don't have sponsors and everything. We just do this Lean Into Artcast because we believe in doing it and to support spreading that other service and to demonstrate that we care about this kind of thing. So anyway, That's what I took away.
And that goes back to something that we talked about pre-show before we started recording, and it's something we've talked about on the show before. And I say this not to say like, oh, we already talked about this, Rob, but more to acknowledge to anybody who's been listening for a long time. Yeah, we know. We talked about this before, but it's worth repeating. Be uncomfortable is when you know you're doing something interesting too, right? So like you said in the text to me when I said, well, I don't know if I'm going to be comfortable with this topic because I'm just going to get into some really honest areas of my zealous overthinking I do that I try to keep to myself. And then you said, well, that means it's a topic because you're going to be uncomfortable. And to go back to some early language that you used, you're on the hunt for honest expression. And part of the way to get to that honest expression is through putting yourself in uncomfortable situations. And I'm not talking about dangling yourself off of a building. I'm talking about putting yourself into situations where you know that this is a part of the overall picture of the creative project that you got to take on and you've been avoiding it. And, you know, it's like language I use in my classroom is I invoke the Wally Wood, the adage that's been attributed to Wally Wood. I haven't actually tracked down an actual document that says he literally said this, but if in doubt, black it out. You know, if you're not comfortable drawing something, cover it up with something else. Nobody will notice that. You can only do that so long before eventually you've had to learn how to draw that thing. There's going to come a situation where you're going to have to. And yeah, it may not be comfortable for you to take on three-point perspective right now, but you'll be glad you did. And you're going to discover something about yourself as an artist. Your art is going to improve. You're going to provide a better service to your clients, et cetera, et cetera. So discomfort and fear are both really, really good emotions to have when you're being creative. Here we go. Stupid helpy tip.
Yeah, that stupid helpy summary. You know what, actually it's funny, I think it's no it, I'm gonna call it helpy helpy.
Oh man, well you know what, I was really uncomfortable this whole time, but this is one of the more fun ones that I've had, so
cool.
Okay, well, if you guys listening and watching had fun, here's where I can do a little housekeeping stuff and do a few calls to action. We're going to be doing these things, these Lean Into Arts via Google Hangouts from now on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can follow us on the Google Pluses at the Lean Into Art feed, which is linked to in the show notes for every episode at leanintoart.com. That's where we're going to be posting the news about, you know, when the show is going to be happening and where you can participate and where the chat will be going on. Also, if you guys watch this on YouTube, a really cool thing you could do to help us out immediately without any extra effort on your part is hitting that like button, that thumbs up button on the YouTube video, which will help more people find the video, which will help more people find the show. So that's a quick and easy way to help us out and absolutely free. And then another free way to do it is to go to iTunes and give us a star review. If you think this thing deserves however many stars you feel like, it's anonymous. If you don't actually write a review, you just pick how many stars you think we deserve, and that'll help raise our rankings or lower them, depending on what you do. But it'll, in any case, it'll help more people find the show if you think it'll be useful to them. So that's all free ways that you can help us out. If you want to drop a little bit of coinage on us, if you think this stuff, well, I want to support these guys. I want these guys. Hey, Jersey's got to get gas money for his car so he can get home. You could go to leanintoart.com/workshops and you could test buy a workshop today. I want to do a follow-up episode, by the way, Rob, after your design critique of the Comics Are Great site and with Ryan Estrada's help of redesigning the Comics Are Great site. I'm not done yet, but I instituted just a few of the changes you guys suggested, and I already noticed that traffic started moving in directions that I wanted it to. Not in terms of like, oh, my page hits are going up, but like things that I wanted people to pay more attention to got more attention by virtue of me just rearranging things and putting the calls to action in a different way. So we got to do a follow-up with that too. And one of the things that I wanted to drive more attention to was the workshops page of the Lean Into Art site, and it's starting to get it now. So
nice work. I need to follow suit and, well, maybe that'll be a good way to push me to hurry up and do that. And then maybe we could do some mutual critique. How about that?
Sounds good.
All right.
All right. So thanks everybody in the who followed along in the live stream. And thanks everybody who downloaded and listened and watched after the fact. And thank you, Rob, for, you know, being my workout partner today. Thanks for doing a couple judo flips and knocking
totally,
me down on the mat.
Totally my uncomfortable pleasure, Jersey.
All right. And happy birthday to Guitar Fighter. People should download that game. It's a cool game, and it's a lot of fun, even if you don't have any interest in learning a musical instrument. But you will learn a musical instrument by playing the game, or at least learn the fundamentals of it. Fundamentals of Music. So that'll be linked in the show notes. Until next time, everybody, I have been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.